Welcome to the Dive, season 8, episode number 8. Honestly, though, we had a fun weekend. We were like LCS face off in the
cage match,
concrete
in the closet.
But it turned
face
out
off can happen in a closet.
It was actually cool though.
I was gonna say it turned out fun, like because all the players got into the trash talk things beforehand. I mean, some of the timings we had to improve on as far as, you know, day 1 to day 2, but I thought a lot of it ended up pretty fun.
Yeah, it was cool. It kind of had that more early esports feel to it where it's like, you know, grassroots, the players are like sitting there looking at each other, they're legit bantering back and forth to the other team. And another one I liked was the post-game interviews where I remember it specifically after the C9 game, like they're just kind of walking up to the players at their desk. It's like very casual feeling.
Checking the damage afterwards.
Yeah, they're like, oh my God. The damage is like everyone like, you know, interacting. Like, I think that's fun. I think seeing pro players like candidly interact with each other is like good content.
It definitely felt like old MLGs and stuff, because like all the MLGs, you get your like station assigned and you're sitting here and they're just on the other side of the table, like basically looking right at you. So yeah, it was definitely that kind of vibe.
Even the first season of LCS, we didn't have a crowd. And it was you could hear, you know, the coaches and the off-screen staff and everything cheering and all this stuff too. It was much more compact.
The first season of LCS was so crazy. It was like you were right there. There was like a drape between you and the other team. I remember when I first joined LCS, it was so much different in person than I thought it was. Because online, like, you can't really tell. Like, it kind of looks normal. But then, like, you go there and you're like, wow, this is something.
Yeah. That's what I was saying when they were showing us beforehand this setup. I was like, oh, it's going to look way bigger and cooler online. Because the actual setup is yeah.
I liked it. I mean, I thought they did a really good job. Honestly, when I heard that we weren't going to be on the main stage, I was like, oh, man, this is maybe going to be kind of butt. But I thought they actually did a really good job setting up the set and having it themed and everything. And I actually was talking to some players. One full team said that they actually wanted to pitch Riot on keeping that instead of going back to stage. They actually liked this setup more and thought it was better than the other one, which, I mean, I think it doesn't look nearly as cool as the main one personally, but I do think it's cool. But it was just kind of interesting that some of the players actually preferred it, because some players were basically saying like, oh, like they don't actually like playing in front of the crowd. Like, they found it more distracting and stuff. Mm. They didn't like that. So they're like, oh, this is actually way better, because it's like there's not as many distractions. Like, I feel like I can play better. They felt like the setup was better as a result. So it was just kind of interesting hearing that, because I hadn't expected that point at all.
It is interesting to hear that. And, you know, I can kind of understand, but I'm like, I will not give up crowds for anything.
Yeah, I love the crowd.
Crowds is the best part, I feel like, of spectator, you know,
it's the atmosphere, right?
I mean, yeah, it's to me, there's so much energy that you lose if you don't have a crowd constantly. This weekend was cool because we still got so many other things going on. Mm-hmm. You didn't really notice it, but that's why I love being in person at live events, you know, having a feeling the energy from all the fans and all the crowds and just making it feel like such a...
I mean, it's literally why people go to esports events generally is the atmosphere, because it's...
Or any sporting event.
Well, true. I mean, the difference I will say, though, with regular sporting events is that you literally have a different view when you go. Like, if I go watch a basketball game or a baseball game, I can be looking at a different player than they're showing on camera the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, if I have a favorite player, I can just watch what that guy's doing. Mm-hmm. Whereas in esports, one of the challenges I always felt that there was with esports for selling tickets is that you're telling me you want me to pay and then come and watch, but then I'm just looking up at the screen and I'm just watching the same screen that I'll be watching at my home, right? So it's like, there has to be some extra reason. And to me, that extra reason has always been atmosphere. So it's like, if I go to an event and it's a really good vibe and everyone's excited and stuff, then like, it feels worth it. It feels fun for me. But otherwise, if I'm going and it's like, and it's kind of lame or whatever, or like there's not people cheering, it's not exciting, then like, I would rather just be laying in my bed or whatever and watching it on my phone, because I'm watching the literal same screen, right?
So that's actually a cool point. And I wonder, like, what if there's a live event where, you know, every player's perspective was shown kind of like near their station, right? Mm-hmm. Like on the front of it. That'd be kind of sick. So, you know, if I just want to see top lane, I'll like, mm-hmm. you know, buy tickets to sit near the top laner and just
top lane
like, watch Impact play the whole time. That would actually be kind
of
sick.
I think it would be cool. I mean, that was one of the things, I haven't talked about this lately, but definitely when I first came into Riot, and that was something I was trying to push when I remember getting to talk to some of the leadership and stuff, is like, you know, there was always this talk in the past, and it's not really the talk these days. But if you remember, I don't know what it was, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, there was all this talk about, oh, we want to, like, you know, build stadiums and localize it, and each team is going to be in a different area. And like LPL was doing this, but then Overwatch League was trying it. And that was for a while all the rage, is that like every team should have be in a different city and all this. And I was like, well, I think the challenge, if you're trying to sell the tickets all the time, is really differentiating the online experience from the in-person experience. There is a difference, obviously, because the atmosphere and, you know, get to meet maybe some of your favorite pros or see other friends or whatever. But I've always thought that was one of the big challenges long term, if you wanted to like consistently week over week sell out like some big stadium, you know, like the NBA does or the NFL does or whatever, is having that like different experience, that different view, because that is one thing that's really different compared to traditional sports.
I would say on this topic of the top lane zone, you know, having the point of view from individual players, I also think it's really cool and it sounds really cool, but the pro view that we implemented
was not popular
at all. You know, apparently the vast majority, you know, or actually implementing it practically just was not successful. Maybe it would have to be something in between where it's like you get the normal screen and setup and everything, and when you're like, oh man, I really personally want to see the trades right now up in top lane, or what happened in this scenario, then you can forcibly, just for a second, like make it go somewhere and then snap back or something.
I don't know. I mean,
it's the main.
It's an interesting problem to think about, right? And it is like being able to watch a specific person was one of the things I think was fun about old lands and MLGs and stuff. Like when I would like play there for a while, people would stand behind you, you know, like they'd be like a rope and people would be standing behind you and watching you. And then there would be like that actual main normal broadcast would be on a stream, but there would be like crowds of people behind the popular players because they just wanted to watch specifically from their point of view. Same thing at StarCraft and like, you know, Halo and COD and all these games. It's like people would try to crowd behind and like watch their favorite players' screens.
Dude, that actually makes me feel way more nervous as a player than playing on a stage. Like I've done that at a few events where I'm like, you know, streaming or whatever, and then there'll be people crowding around me and like watching my every input and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, I could be, you know, playing a pro match in front of like hundreds of thousands of people and like I don't really care online, but like as soon as there's someone behind me just like staring over my shoulder like, yo, you miss SCS, I'm like, my palms are sweating a little bit.
It's definitely a different vibe when you can physically kind of like feel them in your space. Sometimes pros and stuff would stand behind other pros at those events too, yeah. And you could hear them talking. And sometimes we'd do that behind other players and try to like psych them out a little bit and be like, oh man, this guy's ass or whatever, you know, like getting their heads before the games. But it's definitely a different vibe. But that's one of the things I think. Who knows? I mean, esports feels like it's in a different phase right now, but long term, if you ever wanted to be able to like sell out a big stadium week over week, I think they do have some work to do across all esports in differentiating what the viewing experience is in person versus.
I really like that idea. I think that's super cool. Yeah,
super interesting to think about.
But this last week, obviously, you know, we had the LCS. We were off for a couple of weeks. We were back. I will say, I did feel like the players did not look as clean as they had prior to the break. I thought this was a pretty sloppy week compared to what we'd been seeing previous. They felt like there was a lot more kind of little errors and stuff. And I don't know if that was just players kind of like shaking off some nerves and getting back into the stage games or what exactly was the cause of that. Because the teams all were practicing. You know, I know some teams took like a little bit of time off, you know, before getting back into scrims, but it's not like there was some massive break. Teams had like a couple days off. So I was a little bit surprised because I thought largely the LCS had been looking pretty strong and really competitive, but I thought there was like a lot of sloppy stuff this last weekend.
Yeah, you know, I was pretty curious too, because one thing we had this week was a lot of really long games.
Mm-hmm. We had like three one day that were like 40 something minutes.
Yeah, and it happened. So I don't know if you guys caught LCK. There was a match where Aiming got like 600 CS on Lucian or something.
Mm-hmm. It
was like,
yeah, I saw.
Crazy long game by today's standards. Like, I don't know, almost an hour or something. And then all the LCS games were really long too. So I was trying to think when I'm watching, I'm like, was there a patch? Like, did something actually change this? Or did it just so happen this way? And I didn't really come to a conclusion. Maybe it's like
smolder a bit, I think, is the problem.
They're scaling picks, and we saw a lot of games get to like 7 dragons killed. So
that's what
like,
I was going to say.
The early game team is stacking dragons, but then, you know, smolder hits his 225, and then all of a sudden he starts stacking dragons. And so I guess that can make it really long.
That's what I was going to say. We had a lot of instances where, you know, one team is going to focus grubs for the early game and like give up two dragons, and then the other team would win a big team fight or something, and so then they'd have priority, and then they'd start stacking dragons, and so we had the drag out on objectives, and then we also just had crazy shit like contracts. YOLO flash over the back of Baron, he smites the Baron, and you're just like, well, I guess this game's going another at least 5 minutes, and then they actually win with it. Yeah. And that's not something where we could be like, oh, the game changed and it's easier for contracts to go flash in and smite between a rend and a smite. Like, no, that, you know, some of these things just happen.
I mean, the game can change, but contracts as poppy is way too clean, bro. Like, I don't know, the champion seems easy to play, but like, if you try to do it, you're not going to do it like he does. Like, he is so good on that champion.
Yeah, I loved watching that in person too, because I was like, well, they lost, so might as well just go for a YOLO play. And he's like, W on, run straight towards Baron. You could even see Thresh tries to hook him. I was like, oh my God, he's going to get hooked as he goes. But the move speed from W, he's just in front of it, and the hook just missed, and he just gets in. And there's always that small window of everyone says, yeah, you have guaranteed Kalista, rend, and smite. You should get every single smite. I'm like, no, it's still two people trying to coordinate it. And as much as you know, talk about it, it's not bound to the same key. Someone can get in there. And he did. Oh my God. Dude, it was crazy. And then he got out alive. I was like, what?
People's calculations also on the rend, I think, is always wrong.
I mean, who knows exactly how much a rend's going to do, bro? It's like, yeah, I know it. The exact spear count and my exact items and level and Baron, like, time. Like, no, it's not going to happen. I know that in my experience, the time where I got the most smite steals was that meta, however many years ago, where top laners were running smite, right? They would run like smite TP and build Cinderhole.
Yeah, and they always messed it up.
Dude, I mean, it's just people act like, oh, we have two smites, it can't get stolen. But it's like, no, bro, like these are not, it's not one person controlling both of them. It's like you have human error, and it's actually a lot easier to just come in and steal, because like the other jungler is thinking the same thing. He's like, I'm gonna smite when they do. So yeah, I think,
exactly.
People are a little over-optimistic on how guaranteed it is when you have like multiple people doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there's some things that are a little bit of an exception. Like, I think Feast Smite is pretty easy and stuff like that, where it's like you have the exact number and it's such a high number that I think it's it's pretty hard to contest and stuff, and like, or like Nunu or whatever, right? But yeah.
I also just always, when I'm trying to coordinate with someone, I'm just like, all right, what do you think your damage is going to be? Let's do it at half that. Because I don't need way more than 1,200 to be able to win the smite fight. If we say, let's do it at like 18, like that should be enough to beat the other jungler, right?
Yeah, one thing that I actually do is, dude, I've had so many of these conversations on teams over the years about, but like something that actually I found tripped me up was like, I think actually going off of a number over the Baron's health is one of the worst ways to do it. Mm. And it sounds counterintuitive because everyone's like, yeah, you know, like you pick a number, say like 1500, we're going to smite. But realistically, there's so much going on in a Baron situation, right? It's like you're trying to pay attention to how fast Baron's health is going down, like how many things are hitting it, what their jungler is doing, all this stuff. If your tunnel vision on this rapidly changing four-digit number, like you're not going to hit it immediately at it. So what I started doing is like kind of tuning that out and just going more like wide scope and just like seeing everything that's hitting Baron, watching it's like the actual bar go down. And I found my smites got way more accurate that way.
So, but did you have a different strategy with coordinating with someone? Like specifically when you had someone on your
team? Usually what I would find works best is just trying to combo it off of an ability. So I know when I was watching that game, I think it was Volibear, right? Who got it stolen from him?
Who was in there?
So you'd be like, oh, smite with
I would say
e
like,
wins?
Yeah, like drop Volibear's E and be like, rend as this E hits. Mm-hmm. So like we'll combo it with smite, rend, and the E hitting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's like a very visual. And obviously Volibear's E is a bit
that's
more
a perfect
like,
one.
Yeah, it's got a lot of time
a
on
lot
it.
A lot harder if you're like, do it off Volibear's W. You know
what I mean? Like, yeah, yeah.
Wow, how'd you miss that, man? Yeah.
Some of them aren't that obvious, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's a perfect science. There's no way you're going to do it 100% of the time. But
yeah.
I just know that like, from my experience, trying to do it off of the number itself is like not that real because it's changing so much. And it's like, for whatever reason, Baron has regen, so like it goes up sometimes.
I mean, that's a good point. And you don't have as many options in solo queue as you do in pro with the comms. But even then, if you're trying to keep comms clear during a Baron, and when there's another team coming to contest Baron, people are like yelling, keep that other jungler out. People are yelling, you know, turn or finish. And you're also trying to be like, okay, 3-2-1 smite type of thing. Then even the comms get kind of crowded as well.
It's interesting, right? Because anytime I've ever played solo queue and I'm trying to coordinate it, everyone always just says do it at 2K.
Yeah, yeah.
But then because everyone says do it at 2K, if you're trying to steal it, to your point, the other guy is also like, okay, I'm coordinating with you guys too. I'm also pressing it at 2K.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that's I like doing is, so you said Cho'Gath earlier, and like there's Nunu. And one thing you can do against those champs that works really well is like if you go in and CC them as they're trying to secure it, like especially Nunu, like if you just CC him with anything, he'll almost always try to like Q smite. And so if like you interrupt his Q animation, he'll only smite, not Q, and then you can steal it.
Yeah, a lot of times people won't notice that they just got CC'd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's definitely interesting. This is a little bit of a non sequitur, but when I started Riot, I started on playtest team, which was, you know, like on kind of like gameplay side. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I immediately pitched when I first joined, because I was playing like jungle exclusively at the time and I was playing a ton of ranked, I was like, they need actual training tools in League to practice smite fights and stuff. Because I found it really, really frustrating. Like I came over from Dota 2 and I was playing a lot of Dota 2 and I was like really high rated in that. And then I started playing League and I felt like there was these key moments in League that felt like they decided almost the whole game when they happened, but you didn't really get to practice them, right? So it's like someone who had just started playing League, even if I had a ton of MOBA experience, how often was there actually a Baron smite fight? You know what I mean? Is it like once every 6 games? Is it once every 8 games that decides a game in solo queue? I don't know what the actual number is, but you don't get to practice it all the time. But it felt like when it happened and you failed it, the game was like over, you know? And so it was one of those things that I was pitching them to try to do some sort of thing where it was like an AI thing where you could set different difficulties and you could like practice timing abilities and, you know what I mean? Like have like smite fight trainers and have like team fight trainers where you could reset and do things like this, because there's these key moments in League that decide so much, but they're rare. It's like that 40-minute team fight, when it happens, you know it's going to decide the whole game. But for someone who was like newer into the game, it was always like so intimidating because you could be doing well the whole game, but you mess up this one moment and it felt like everything else you did didn't matter. So I always kind of wish that League had better training tools with that sort of stuff. It would make it easier, I think, to get into.
Yeah, I feel like everybody has, and like coaches and analysts and everybody has been asking, you know, for those for so long. And it even took a really long time for us to get the practice tool that we have now.
I like practice tool.
That took a very, very long time. You know, League was around for forever without a lot of these options. So be grateful for what you have.
I am grateful for it. And I also know it's unrealistic to expect more because from what I've heard, it is like an infinitesimally small percentage of players that have ever, not even often use it, but have ever even clicked practice tool. It's like no one uses this ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the vocal majority of people are like coaches and analysts and everything.
Yeah.
Like you're saying and yourself, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, I wish I could practice this stuff. But the vast majority of people,
the development time just isn't worth it when almost no one's going to use it. But it is interesting, and those things I think would be a lot of fun, especially the smite fight one, because still that I think there's nothing worse than failing a smite at a Baron and feeling like and everyone blames you.
But also nothing better than the feeling of going in and stealing a Baron.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I feel like I'm just numb to it at this point because I've played jungle for so long. Like I've had a lot of things stolen from me. I've stolen a lot of things. Uh-huh. I'm like, I think a lot of junglers at that point just kind of accept. It's just like, it's like I almost empathize with the other jungler when I steal it from him because I'm like, I know this guy's getting roasted. And it's like, bro, it just happens. Like, there's no way you're winning every smite fight. That's just not how the game works.
I had a Jhin steal one from me the other day with like a freaking, I don't know what it was, like a 1500 fourth shot or something like that. It just went bing and just stole it from me. And my whole team was not very happy.
Nah, the worst is when your team actively trolls you on the smite fight too. So like my most recent example is I was playing a game as Brand jungle. I had a Draven on my team. He leaves Baron when it's at 1300 health. He just stops hitting it. Everyone stops hitting it. And I'm like trying to kill it. And then the Shaco just walks up and steals it. I'm like, just what did you want me to do, man? Like, it was literally not securable. I could not have done anything there.
Yeah.
I definitely feel that, yeah.
And that's tough.
It's actually interesting because there's a lot of reasons that people have tried to come up with for why is jungle so unpopular. And all of the roles, there's been this, like, role war now this past week that's kind of come up on social media, and everyone's been discussing the ins and outs of support's inflated, jungle's so unpopular, nobody wants to play it, AD carries are squishy and weak, and they're the normal thing that AD carries are always crying about, and top laners are lonely, but then they're also super OP and fed nowadays, and I guess mid laners are always happy just because mid lane's always open.
Mid lane's
actually
what
always
can they
OP.
Complain about? You can't even gank that lane anymore. Yeah. Put the brushes so far back.
Everybody also just kind of like accepts that mid lane is like, yeah, it makes sense. They're in the middle of the map. They can go anywhere. Like, yeah, it's supposed to be a really strong role. And that's why it's one of the most picked roles. So
I mean, it's
we don't have to talk about mid lane, but all the other roles have their like
mid lane probably has the least amount of just terrible experiences.
Yeah. It's, I mean, when you get counterpicked in mid, there can be annoying counterpicks, but it's like, it's not a long extended lane like top lane where you're just super isolated and screwed by it. It's a lot easier to have coverage because your support and your jungler are more commonly playing in that area of the map. So you're more likely to have wards put down for you and things like that. It's just the bad mid lane experiences, I feel like, are nowhere close to the frustrating top lane experiences, at least in my opinion. I play Phil, so I play a lot of different roles. I think top lane is one of my best roles, like one of the roles I'm best at, but I just find it really unfun. Because to me, top lane is the most punishing in a bad matchup. And it's generally, you're only going to have a lot of fun if you pick second, it feels like. Because it's like, if you get to put the other person in this bad matchup, that's really, really fun. Sometimes it's like, you're super isolated and it feels like you're just kind of stuck there and you don't really have any help. Other times, the other jungler is like just ruining your game completely, it feels like. And your team is unlikely to go up there and actually help you. It's not that I think top lane is weak, because I actually don't. I think they can have a big impact on the game. But I find it a really frustrating role to play. And then I would say the other least favorite role I have is definitely AD. I think those are the two least fun. AD just feels like there's so many, at least maybe it's partially just because the champions I play and stuff, but like so many of the picks, it feels like you spend so much time farming and doing all this stuff and just maximizing gold because that's kind of what you need to do. And then oftentimes, whether you're having a good game or a bad game, it feels like the game has been decided before you're a part of it. It's like, okay, sweet, I got my three items, I'm online, guys, but like your team is already, you know, like you have like a 20 kill talent or something, you already won the game, or your top lane is 0-17 and they've already killed your inhibitor, you know what I mean? Like it feels like there's a lot of those games. Whereas when I play mid jungle or support, I feel like I almost always, there are some games where you just get screwed, but almost always have a significant impact on the game because I have time to move around the map. Mid lane has the most access to move around. Supports can just take roam timers. You don't have to be attached to gold, and junglers can be around on the map elsewhere. So to me, those are the roles that are the most fun to play. Not necessarily guarantee the most like strongest, but the most fun because I feel like I'm always part of every game.
Yeah, I mean, that is the archetype of AD carry, though, is built around being the most team reliant role.
Yeah.
That's identity of the role. So I feel like it's always going to feel like that in a team based game, especially with one that has a community like League of Legends, where in solo queue, you know, if you're not queuing with your friends, then most people take a very negative attitude towards all their teammates. And then you're in the role that's the most dependent on all your teammates. So imagine what's going to happen there.
Yeah. Again, nothing bad, but least fun for me.
Yeah. As for top lane, I was going to bring up top lane because I feel like it has quietly, top lane is low key one of the most OP now. If you're looking at the top of ranked ladders over many regions, there are tons of top laners at the very top because there is so much experience
at the top. Sorry.
Nice. there's so much experience, and with the addition of Void Grubs, in fact, there are a lot of winning lines from top lane, especially with some of the champions where people have started to play like Vayne top and all these different things, and top laners now being in a position where they can level one invade enemy jungle and just totally screw the enemy jungle without losing very much.
Oh, that is so cringe, dude. Yeah, like range tops with ghosts and invading, like nah.
Yeah.
Get that out of my game, bro.
Yeah, I had that happen a couple times with you know, the Vayne specifically, but even like Garen's and stuff. Feels like everybody's taking license now to come, you know, take.
Fiora is probably the biggest defender. Like she can just 1v2 you half the time, or Jace.
Just
like,
Q over the wall.
Yeah, all these things. So I feel like top lane, while it is very isolated at times, has the designers accomplished their goal of like injecting power into this role. And I think it is a very powerful role. Like you're saying though, sometimes when you have a lot of power like that and it is lopsided, then it will feel so insanely bad for the other one.
Because like you guys are talking about the Vayne. It's like, it's not fun getting invaded by Vayne. It's also not fun when you're like, well, I'm blind, I guess I'll play a tank this game. And you're like, all right, 20 minutes sitting under my tower, getting true damage killed by a Vayne. I sure hope my jungler comes, otherwise I can't do anything this game.
I have not pinged or said anything to my top laner in probably 5 years. Because I know if you touch them at all, they're over the edge and they'll.
We're on the boiling point. We're playing against Vayne. We're playing against ADTF. We've been under a tower for 15 minutes. If you ping me one goddamn time, Kobe,
see,
I'm going to lose it.
See, I didn't even ping him. I just brought up that I have not pinged him. And that's...
Dude, I think top lane's actually pings, like,
I hear them.
In my mind, top lane's, I think, the most fun role for me. I mean, like, obviously jungle is my main role, but I guess of the roles that I'm not maining, I really like playing top because it's kind of like the tough guy role for me. Like, you know, the salty Splatoon thing from SpongeBob is how I always picture it. It's because it's like some games you just get shit on. Like, there is absolutely nothing you can do. You got camped. But I do think the biggest areas of frustration is, like you said, counter picks.
Yeah.
And then people not running TP is so tilting because it's like, if I know if I take Ignite in top lane, my jungle is pathing down. I'm getting camped. The game's horrible. If they're taking Ignite, my jungler's pathing down. I'm getting camped. And it's just like, God, like, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when you play a strong matchup that has Ignite and you're playing TP, you know you can't ever win an all-in against this guy.
Yeah.
So you're just completely waiting for your jungler.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times as jungle, it's not even worth your time to try to salvage a Doom top lane. So it's like... Hey man, I know it's bad. It's gonna get worse. Sorry, like I don't know what to tell you, bro. Better like next time. You'll get counterpick.
Yeah, I mean, at least if your jungler or whoever then is like doing a lot elsewhere, then you kind of have the like, okay, it's gonna be fine. Like, you know, but like when that is happening to you and then your bot lane dies 2v2, I just want out.
Yeah,
know?
Dude, I'll weak side, but if my strong side's losing,
then
FF
get
fast.
Me out. Yeah,
if this game goes past 15, I'm griefing.
So there. Historically and very famously, there was always this, you know, jungle rules of solo queue. And one of the top ones was never gank a losing lane. But sometimes I actually do like mental health ganks for lanes.
Where
I'm like, this guy is just going to spiral. I got to go give him something. Even if that is not the way for us to win the game. Like our win con is like smolder or something, right? But I'm like, I can see it. He's on the edge.
He might not be your win con, but he is going to be your lose con if he doesn't get a gank soon.
I don't know, man. Like that feels like you're negotiating with terrorists at that point, man. Like, nah. The way I see it is like if somebody's going to lose their mind, they're going to lose their mind no matter what. I just hard mute them. I just pretend like they're not there. Pretend like they're not losing their mind and just try to win anyway.
You got to stick to those rules, the golden rules of a jungler.
Dude, because like I do the same thing. I'm like, man, especially, okay, the one that's me is like, say my laner screws himself over to help me early game, I'm like, I want to try to get him back into the game, and like 99% of the time I'll just lose trying to do that because, like, you know, it's just not a good play.
Yeah, it is tough. It's interesting, the whole support inflated thing I think is interesting because it's just like, so it tests different skills, right, is the reality. So there are like less skills that are being tested, I guess. And I think that's maybe where the support inflated stuff comes from. Because at the end of the day, you don't have to farm. You aren't as punished if you're missing out on experience and things like this. Like, those are the two main factors that I think allow supports to move around the map and do these other things. There's also some of the champions that are obviously like some of the most basic champions in the game are pretty good and fit in support. Things like Yuumi, things like Janna and Sona and whatever. It's not that there isn't a mastery curve to them, but I think that people feel like, oh, you can do such a low kind of like baseline and still have...
Yeah, you slipped Yuumi in there. That's not getting past me.
You can have some effectiveness. What, you don't think it deserves to get in there?
No, she doesn't even deserve it to be in the game, bro.
Okay, well, there you go. But it's like, at the same time, I do think that there can be an enormous amount of skill in support. And I do think that when you have this person who's just like scraping the bottom of the barrel, doing the bare minimum as a Janna, and then they play against someone who's like a really good support, you can get absolutely crushed in lane. And so it's not as though there's no skill in the role or whatsoever. I just think it tests less skills and people are more frustrated because it feels like support has more options because their time is not as like linked to farming or getting experience. Like, you can just do what you want.
Also, what you're describing is exactly what the root causes of something, a role being inflated would need.
Yeah.
If there is a large portion that are not doing a lot and then you come in and, you know, you're like Bobchun who's playing support LeBlanc and you're pentakilling and you're soloing the enemy AD carry, then people are like this guy is doing so much more than the average support.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of that might come from the origins of the role at the beginning of most of these types of games is like, this is the role that you bring your friend when you're bringing a new friend in and explaining the game to them, right? You're,
it's
like,
mercy and
don't
Overwatch.
Worry. Yeah, you're like, don't worry, I'll carry this game while you learn the game. You're going to be this supportive role and you help us out and you buff up the rest of your friends that have been playing the game for a while. And so it's kind of like, it has always been the starter role, I feel like, for new people getting into MOBAs. And that creates a base of the, like, the player base for the role. And then when you have people that are, like, you know, swapping from mid lane or something into support, you can always be like, whoa, you know, you see a big difference of how, like, they kind of look at the role. But there is a lot of mastery to what you're talking about. Ward placements. Like, I follow a bunch of, like, challenger supports just because they'll put out, like, crazy graphics on, like, oh, did you know this ward spot here or whatever, which is super useful for jungles. And especially, like, when the map changed. So yeah, there are definitely different things, you know, recall timings and vision lines and stuff like that that are super interesting. But yeah, I have when you're in a game and you just, there's a support that's chilling in lane farming with their AD or whatever, and then the enemies have some Camille or Shaco or LeBlanc.
Pantheon support or, in my top jungle, yeah. Level one, and then winning bot lane, and then it grubs everywhere, and my bot lane's still losing. Yeah. Like,
and the whole team is then, like, next. They're like pinging the enemy bot tower, like, you better be getting turret plates or diving him or something. And you see, like, the AD carries have the same CS.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Actually, yo, that's going back to that point you mentioned, I've had this conversation on the co-stream, but how much of the perception of the roles do you think comes from, like, the actual name itself? Because AD carry has always been the name, right? Mm-hmm. And it implies that you're doing more than the rest of your team, right? Like, carrying. It's weird that we have this term carry, which as a noun and a verb are just almost unrelated, but they're kind of like, it gets mixed, right? Because on one hand, it's just the champion you're playing. Like, I'm playing Aphelios. I'm the carry. But if I'm 0-10 and my jungler is 20-0 Rengar, like, am I really the carry? Like, I don't know. So it is weird that, like, I think a lot of like, the perception has come from, like, the names of the thing.
And the glass cannon role of being, like, the AD carry, you know, the carry that's supposed to build all damage is inherently also, like, a risky, you know, it's a risky position. So if you are behind and you're mm-hmm. the role that's supposed to build all damage, you're going to be easy to kill, and you're probably not going to do more damage than the 20-0, you know, jungle or whatever either. So you're going to be a useless.
I think one of the difficulties too with support is that there's, like, this balancing act. Like, when I, so Dota has made it, I think, a little bit easier for supports to get items and stuff now. But, like, back when I played a lot of original Dota and Dota 2 and whatnot,
yeah, you actually have zero.
Like, you actually had no gold, right? Like, you'd be playing, like, Crystal Maiden or something. You're like hard fifth support. You're just buying you're buying wards of the team. You're buying potions for your teammates. You're buying like the item carry, like, to, like, fly out to your teammates and stuff, and the courier. Excuse me.
You also lose gold when you die.
You lose gold when you die. The only time you ever really got gold for stuff was in rare circumstances where you could, like, stack a jungle camp and farm it on some specific champions, or if just, like, all your ganks worked and all your movements around the map to work and you started picking up gold from team fights. But it was like, you would literally get to the point in those games, especially back in the old days when I played, where, like, the core, like, the actual carry of the game, if they were really fed, could literally kill you, not with a spell, with, like, one auto attack in some cases. And you're just like, it could be a Cleave champion that attacks Kobe, who's the carry, and I'm just near him and I die in one hit, right? And so, like, that is the super extreme of being so useless. And it's not that they didn't have mastery and it couldn't be fun to play. It was really fun to play when I was playing with other really good players, and you play competitively and you feel like your teammates are getting a lot out of your vision and dewarding, and then you, like, smoke for a gank and it works and blah, blah, blah. But no one wants to play like that. No one wants to be the weak little rat in solo queue. And so it's a balancing act between that and I think where we are in League. And maybe League is a little bit too far the other way, because where I empathize with the support complaints is that I do think, for a role that doesn't have to farm and doesn't have to do all these things, you get a lot of power very quickly with the support upgraded items. And then just, like, you get a lot of gold from the support item as well. You know, you have one or two good fights and all of a sudden you're on one core plus your support item when the enemy carry is on one. And it's like, on some of these champions, you could just solo the guy, right? Like, if you're playing brand support or something like that, the enemy AD is like, I have to spend all my focus getting all the minions. I can't miss any minions, and I have to fight you. But you can just, like, 100-0 me if you hit your full combo on me as this, like, support who's kind of just, like, strafing in lane and waiting. You're like, well, what's that about, right? So I think there is a balancing act, but it's tough because if you make them too weak or have not enough gold, no one cues the role. Like, no one's going to have fun with that. Or you end up in a weird circumstance where your brand support now, all of a sudden, I don't know if you remember how this stuff used to be back in the day, where I feel like where supports were more poor, they just start stealing farm and stuff like that. They're like, oh, I need gold.
So that'll get you a quick report.
You know what I mean? But like, people get in those kind of situations where like that just causes more frustration. So I do think it's not an easy thing to solve.
Yeah, I think for me, I always thought support was a little weird when they changed the support item to be capped as far as how much gold you can get. I never fully understood why it was like that. But that's, I think that's definitely a part of the issue nowadays. Is like, you know, before, like, once you completed your quest, like, you would still get gold from, like, you know, your Targon stacks
or whatever, and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, even just the effect was still there, right? Like hitting champions with Frost Queen or whatever would get you gold. Targons would still work. But nowadays, like, once you complete your quest, you're done. Like, you don't really get gold except for the passive stuff. But what it does is it makes your build much more front-loaded. Like, you get, because you don't need to spend gold upgrading your support item, it turns into a really efficient item from just completing the quest. And then, like you said, you get another item. So I think their power is very front-loaded now, which feels bad for like AD carries, because, you know, they have to farm the whole time. They're really weak.
And then they're
just getting like one shot by, you know, any random support.
Or brand or whatever.
So that definitely does feel bad. But like you said, on the other hand, you know, I see why other roles want support to be weak, but who's going to play support if it's just terrible? Like, it's not fun to just be like the weakest person on your team. You have no agency or whatnot. So there's probably some middle ground. Maybe they're too strong right now, but I like support being more on the strong side, I think. Otherwise, just nobody plays it.
I mean, of the conversation going right now, I feel like I would take the strongest stance of it is too strong, definitely, right now. You know, I feel like you guys maybe are a little on the fence. I've decided I'm planting my flag. I think they are definitely too strong right now, as far as they right now, it feels like they've been able to get to the point where they are stronger than, you know, another.
You win 1v1s.
Yeah, they can win 1v1s and stuff. And that's why people, I mean, some of the supports that I even listed, people in the past would be like, oh, that's super troll. Like, even to play that as a support champion. But now people are like, oh, nice. I got a Camille support on my team. That guy's going to go, like, screw over the enemy jungle. That guy's going to be soloing the AD. You know, all this type of stuff. I do think there's so many different avenues that they're getting the extra power. And they have a lot of freedom to roam at the moment, that it almost feels like, and maybe this is also like a little bit bitter jungle talking, but you're a jungle that has less constraints,
farm camps,
less jobs to do. And of course people are going to be a little salty. Other roles are going to be looking at support. Like, why doesn't that support also have to take out the garbage? Like, I do everything around this house and support gets to have as much, maybe even more fun than me. And they get to like choose their job. They're like, I guess I'll lane with my AD. It seems like a good AD. And then they're like, well, the AD's not very good this game, so I'm just going to leave him. And then top laner's like, well, I'll be happy to have you. You know, come on up here, or, you know, go play with mid, go play with jungle type of thing.
I mean, the other side of it is just that it's like, well, but maybe it is a bit too strong. I don't really have a super strong opinion, because I think you still need people to play the role.
Sure.
It's so fun. Like, I actually think support is super fun right now. It's one of my favorite roles to play, absolutely. Because, yeah, like, you have so much flexibility in the way that you can do it, right? Not even just within like decision trees within the game, but in the variety of champions you can play. I can play Braum and just be glued to my AD and, all right, we're gonna play this defensive style. Or I could play Alistar and just like never lane the whole game. Or I could play Bard and be, you know, roaming around and harassing the enemy jungler with my jungle. Or I could play Camille and try to be a carry. Senna support is really good, and you can actually build into like heavy AD styles. You could play mages and stuff and actually be a beast in team fights. Like, there's so many different styles that I think are pretty viable. It's maybe not the right choice in every game, but like, I do think from a design point of view, they've done a really good job with just making the role fun to play, right? Like, I don't mind at all when I get support, and I think there's so much variety, so I do think that's a positive. But you know, I can totally see some of the frustrations, especially when I play AD. When I play AD, I'm more frustrated with support than any other role,
of course.
But like, yeah, I mean, it's a give and take, so I think it's a tough question.
Cool.
All right. We have 14.5 that is going to be coming out, and we are going to be first to 14.5 this coming week. The final week for LCS regular season is going to be a super week, so we'll be on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Remember, we're going to be on Friday. There will be games. These three games are going to be the last of the regular season, and then 14.5 is going to stick with us through playoffs. So this is going to be our playoff patch and is not going to be changing then until, I guess, MSI. So this is going to be a really, really important patch. And what do you guys think about so far?
It's interesting. Looking at all the champs that were buffed in nerf, it doesn't seem like there were too many crazy staples of pro play being touched in this one.
You know, I see a lot from solo queue, though.
I
like this patch.
Yeah, like I'm down for Nidalee nerfs. Like, that champ's just obnoxious. It looks like of the nerfs, there's TF, Senna, Maokai, which are the ones that we're seeing in pro play. So, seems fine. I don't know. It felt like kind of a small patch to me overall, though. I don't think it's going to, like, wildly shape the meta.
This is one of the reasons why this patch is one of the patches I actually have been most excited about and really on board with and really like, I feel like, in a while. Because they are hitting a lot of problematic solo queue champions, but not so hard that they're going to kill them, right? You go down the list of these, you see the nerf list, and you're like, oh, okay, let's go see what they're actually doing. And you go down, and I feel like even people that main these champs are like, well, you know what? It's probably not so bad. That's probably not so bad. And so these do feel like more medium taps than some of the bigger swings that we've seen, which to me feels really good as far as going in on a playoff patch. I feel like Volibear is going to gain more popularity and thus will probably get some nerfs down the line.
You think the buffs made him that good?
Yeah, I was a little bit worried about the buffs, and now I keep seeing the play rates increase a bit. So as more people start to play it, it's still massively played way more in top lane. So I don't know, maybe jungle escapes it a little bit, but
this last patch he wasn't even listed as a jungler. If you sort by jungles, he wasn't even there.
He hasn't been for a long time. Even all last year, when I was maining him, he was not a jungle. And lots of people have these like apps now that you use, and I feel like I couldn't beat them, so I joined them and I got one that shows like the seconds for jungle camps. And they also have these things after the game that have little tags. One of the tags for me every game was exotic jungler, because nobody plays Volibear jungle. It's slowly gaining more popularity. And I think due to the popularity in pro play, in LCS at least, since LCS was like spamming Volibear, I shouldn't have opened my big mouth and told so many. But I feel like that's going to accelerate the popularity. And then he'll probably be in line for, we'll see some small.
What do you think about builds for Voli? Because we've seen a couple things going on. If you look at the win rate sites, it still recommends his old build of cooldown boots, Iceborne into Deadman or whatever. But we're also seeing a lot more Sundered Sky, Sterix type stuff. So what do you like?
That's been my go-to. I don't want to turn this into too much Volibear talk. I'm a little sensitive. I don't want to overwhelm people, but I absolutely love Sundered Sky because it makes your Q crit and it counts the Q damage. The extra bonus damage of Q also crits. That's one of the reasons why I dropped, after the second nerf to Titanic Hydra, I dropped Titanic Hydra. I was spamming it before because he scales so well with the bonus health things, but completely dropped it and went full Sundered Sky. Absolutely love this item. Not only does it make your Q crit, which is Volibear, a lot of your ganks are all this upfront burst damage. Your Q flashing to stun them on an E, and so your Q is critting, you're getting the E damage, you're getting a whole bunch of burst damage when you're catching someone. And then it also doubles as an amazing teamfight item because you can go slap multiple people, heal up a whole bunch. So it's just, and it gives cooldown reduction, which is a massively underrated stat for Volibear since you want follow-up Ws for the massive healing from biting people who already have the bite mark. So I'm all about the Sundered Sky rush. That being said, Iceborne is not a bad item. It's an okay item, and I will rush it if it's an all AD team that we're playing, something like that. Also, one thing that is super, super underrated and almost never done is Sheen is just a very good, efficient component item now. If you feel like you need a little bit of extra damage to finish off enemy carries or something like that, just sitting on a Sheen, which gives you the Sheen effect and the ability haste, is extremely good for a lot of champs. Bob Chin also does this on his support LeBlanc. But yeah, the Steric's Gauge second item is my current favorite. You can switch between that or like Dead Man's is very solo queue. Move Speed is way better for solo queue, where you can pick someone off in a side lane and you just win solo queue games like that. It's mostly about just picking people off towards mid game. But Steric's is godlike for him for team fighting because the shield activates when you're low and then you get your healing off your W. That's way too much Volley Bear talk though.
I was gonna say, you're like, I'm gonna be pretty concise.
Let me get on my list here.
That's why I said you guys are directed Volley Bear stuff. I'm like, I don't know if you should do that.
He's just like, you guys can leave.
That's my fault.
I'm like,
Volley Bear was born a young bear in the mountains of the Freljord.
It's funny because Flowers shouted out on stream one of the like things I told him about Volley Bear lore. Yeah. I was kind of.
Oh, you're
proud
in the lore. You're in deep.
No, I absolutely fell in love with the champ. But that's why I'm like, okay, don't direct any more Volley Bear questions because it'll go on too long. One thing I was hyped about, the Rek'Sai buffs slash corrections to some of the bugs. Mm-hmm. Because like Meteos, I really have been waiting for this rework and looking for it to be good. Unfortunately, it does sound like a new bug with the W has popped up in this patch with a lot of the fixes that they made and the buffs that landed.
Unlucky.
And so I'm seeing already on the front page of some of the win rate sites that currently the win rate is actually down despite these buffs and bug changes. I'm assuming it's because of the new bug. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how quickly they will be able to get that new W1 looked at, but I am so excited for this champ because I love early game junglers, because I love being the one with the power to decide which lanes are important. And I like the feeling of having the early lead and then you being the one that by your mistake, oh no, you lose it or you get outskilled or whatever. I like being the more active one, and Rek'Sai is definitely in that vein. You mentioned already, like the Nidalee, Belveth, nerfs, Evelynn nerfs, a lot of these ones that have been really high win rate for solo queue, not really seen as much in pro play except for like the Belveth and then the Blabber Nidalee game that he had.
Yeah.
The Nidalee nerfs aren't that big. They're not going to walk back the full buffs that they got though. How do you feel about base move speed? Because to me, base move speed, it doesn't look that big.
Oh, it's big.
But then as I say it, I'm like,
it's really big.
I'm like, base move speed is like everything for jungle. So I don't know if we're going to see any more Nidalee after these nerfs.
I hope not.
You didn't like the Cloud9?
I mean, watching her is fine, but I don't know. Like, I get the ick from champs in solo queue that are like Nidalee, Kindred, Graves type champs who are just like win because they just clear too fast and they just run around too fast and like they just win by out resourcing you. Like,
I feel like Kindred doesn't really fit into that.
Dude, I hate this champ, bro. Like,
I hate the champ, but it's not one of the fastest clears in the game.
I think she does it a lot by invading.
Like all three of those, it's not that they're first clear super fast. They're not Karthus jungling you, but they cheese you in the beginning, and then they get one item, and then they just like they insta clear their jungle while you're
Once she has items, it scales really well.
And so what she does is she does a lot of early invades abusing the range factor, and that's how it gets like. You know, I feel the emotion of the same thing. You know, a lot of junglers get kind of triggered by stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I just had to say, because I don't think her clear, like first clear for sure, is definitely not.
Yeah, but touching on Rek'Sai for a sec, that Rek'Sai has depressed me. I was so excited for Rek'Sai. Like when I first heard about it, I was, oh man, like it is just the biggest disappointment ever as a Rek'Sai player. Like she's horrible and buggy, and the fact that like I think what got me the most was hours after the patch came out they recognized she was bugged and they said, yo, we got you in 2 weeks. Like, why is that not hot fixed? I don't know.
I will say, when I saw your tweets as one of the first things after the patch came out, and you were like popping off about how this champion is garbage,
it's so bad. Horrible.
Had 51% win rate on 14-4.
Nope, wrong. Complete dog shit.
It had 51% winner. That's all I'm going to say. So it's like, I can get that you hated this champion, but I was like, damn, this champion must be butt. And I went and looked, thinking it was going to be like 42 or something.
I mean, I don't know. And what stats are you looking at? Because she was like 45% win rate.
All 14-4, Emerald Plus, she's 51. I mean, I could look Diamond.
Is this Lolitics?
Yeah.
I mean, every win rate's padded by 5% on that site.
Well, yeah, as long as you compare it to the average of the tier.
So for example, in Diamond Plus, average tier is 52.86, and it was 52.29. So it's like it's about a 50% win rate.
Average.
Yeah. Average. Yeah. You know, but like, so I can respect you didn't like it, but you made it sound so butt. So I was like,
Bro, play it and tell me it's not.
In Challenger, it actually had a. I mean, average tier for Challenger is 57.6 at a 59.3% win rate.
A couple of other nerfs on here. We did actually see a top vein. So, like, I guess it's worth talking about the vein.
Did we?
We did at the very end. The condemn flash at the end was pretty sick.
Just need a Baron throw, you know, to lose 1v1, get to six items.
Have your Taliyah already killed two people, and so then you get to chase. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Once you're full build, you know, 40 minutes in, when the vein top spikes.
It was really funny because Doklo was streaming after their LCS game. Yep. And he was just straight up saying, like, yeah, I trolled my build. Like, I'm saving the real build for solo queue. And then he was playing in solo queue going, like, you know, Bork, Gwinsu, Terminus.
I thought he was going to go Bork for sure.
Yeah, I mentioned on Cast 2 because I, like, looked it up. And I was like, there are some veins that did this, like, Q build with the Stormraiser and SSJ. And so I was like, oh,
Q-Max,
yeah, there are some. It's that, like, apparently the balance team saw it, and they're directly nerfing Q. The tumble start is nerfed by 2 seconds early. Of course, if you're maxing it, then you're gonna get back to the 2 seconds once you max it.
But it's still pretty big for people, for the on-hit builds and stuff.
And Vayne top actually got super popular because there was a challenger in Korea that was abusing people with it, just doing Vayne top. And he's the player that I blame for all of the top laners invading jungle level 1, because he was doing it with Ghost, Lethal Tempo, Vayne, spam invading enemy jungle, literally did it every single game. And everybody takes their cues off of Korean Challenger gameplay. And so this is like all the content creators and everybody's
Are you guys familiar with Lul Dobby?
Yeah. He did a video on it.
Yeah, dude, I swear, this guy is like one of the most influential people out there right now for the meta. Like every few days he comes out with these videos. Very good, by the way. I'm a big fan of his. Yeah. And literally every time he comes out with a video, you just start seeing it pop up in solo queue, like Vayne top. He did like the Unending Despair Volibear top thing, like just everything.
I mean, everything kind of filters down, right? Because it's a top challenger in Korea is definitely where a lot of people are looking. A lot of the top LCK pros and some of the best solo queue players. People look at that, then they make content about it, and then the content creators get watched by a hardcore audience who then start playing it in solo queue, and then it starts popping up on data sites and all this stuff and on streams, and it all kind of filters down, right? Yep. But it is definitely interesting when people can kind of like cook something up that really changes the way how people are playing and changes the way that people kind of need to adapt to it. So I do think that part of it is really cool.
All right, my biggest question: what do you guys think of the Senna nerfs here? Because Senna,
I don't think it matters at all.
Senna is it's just massive,
tiny R change, right? I think it's basically
wait, wait,
irrelevant.
That's
Yorick.
I thought it was just her Q got like a 0.1 ratio.
Okay,
or
Senna Q. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was just the Q.
It's went from 50% bonus AD to 40%. I really don't think it matters.
That's a slap on the wrist. That champ's still gonna be OP.
I mean, especially for support where you're not gonna have as much AD, you're not gonna have as many items. It's not gonna be that big of a deal. I'm sure this is something that is gonna move the win rate. Like, I don't know what the intended goal is, but they have, when Freak was on, he talked about it, but they have really good data that shows like, oh, X damage percent generally moves the needle like 0.5% or 1%. Mm-hmm. But as far as pro, I don't think this is really gonna change any priority personally. And the other champion I was looking at and kind of really interested about is Smolder, because Smolder obviously is really getting popular. And they did change around some things. I need to look at some math on what the Q changes actually are going to mean as far as damage thresholds. Because basically before, it was like once you have the true damage upgrade, the third upgrade, you had 6.5% flat burn, and that never changed. But you could change the actual like execute threshold. So the 6.5% always stayed the same. Now it is 2% bonus AD plus 1% of your total AP plus 0.8% of your stacks of target's maximum health. So like off the top of my head, I don't know what that means. I'm going to be honest. Like I need to actually look up some math for this to see, okay, when you have three items with this build and 225 stacks, like what is the actual damage change? Because that is pretty big. So I'm not sure exactly how big of a nerf or buff that is going to be. The other thing that is also really interesting is the E change. previously you only scaled your E with a crit build, basically. Like, you only got additional bolts if you went the crit build. So like the kind of more caster builds that I think are actually better didn't scale at all with the E. So you put just 1 point in E until last.
Yeah.
Now it scales with your stacks, not just your crit. So the like Shojin Liandry's builds and things like that, those actually are still going to have E scaling. So you may more commonly see people even with those builds doing like, you know, just the 3 points W into 5 points Q and then maxing E and things like that. So there's going to be more different variation potentially on the builds that could work. The R also got a change. It's a slight damage nerf if you just get by the sides, but the sweet spot damage got increased. So that is going to be a bigger hit if you get hit by the sweet spot. And then also the self heal got an AD ratio, whereas previously it only had an AP ratio. So if you have some AD in the build, it should be a higher self heal.
I really wanted the ultimate to get a cooldown nerf, because one of the most frustrating things about this champ,
wave clear.
Yeah, it's a farming scaling champ, and then you have this giant wave clear ultimate.
Alt WQ, the wave's gone.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was actually hoping for like a cooldown nerf on it. Mm-hmm. This, I feel like it's still going to be able to be extremely good wave clear.
I mean, it doesn't look like the wave
clear. Not that much.
Well, with the sweet spot, it's probably going to be even or maybe better. I don't know.
Yeah, that should work on minions directly. Yeah. So as long as you hit them while they're walking in a straight line, all of them will be in the sweet spot.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. On a lot of these abilities, they kind of have like, you know, the little custom restrictions put on it, like 50% damage to minions or something. I kind of expected something like that. You don't normally have these like massive range things that just clear the entire wave like that. So maybe sometime in the future, or they just like that aspect of him.
Also, people are just getting better at playing, you know, Braum and Janna and type of stuff with him and keeping him safer, and it's more frustrating. And day one win rates for these changes, which don't necessarily mean these are directly from you know, these changes or whatever, is over 1.5% increase in win rate. Yep. Like I said, it could be more and more time people are playing them. The supports are playing better with him, that type of stuff.
This stuff reads as a buff to me. And I know, like, every time I've looked, the more caster style builds always have a significantly higher win rate. When it first came into pro, people were doing pure crit build. They were doing like Essence Reaver, Rapid Fire, BT, like this kind of stuff. They were doing Nivori and whatnot. Now they have like modified that to now people do Essence Reaver Shojin, and Shojin's in every game. I still think that Liandry's and stuff could move in there. I think it can be better in a lot of the games, personally. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much the needle is going to kind of shift with these changes. But this champion is really strong. And if it is in solo queue, pushing more people to be finally building Shojin and things like that, his win rate's just going to go up, because his win rate had been significantly higher with those like tankier style builds compared to the crit marksman builds. And over time, it has been getting more and more popular. Right now, on the patch, it looks like it's about the same, but Triforce is getting more popular and things like that as well.
Yeah, the just if you're a hyper carry, being tanky it's so hard to deal with.
Yeah, a lot of the changes we were talking about for a lot of this patch have been solo queue stuff, but these two champs, the Senna and the Smolder that we're just going over, is really big pro. You know, because those are the two that people are deciding between basically in a lot of the early pick ban. So I actually, this patch, with Senna going down 2.5% and then Smolder going up a percentage, might actually swing that choice, where I feel like this last weekend, a lot of teams were leaning into the Senna side of it. And I was leaning into the Senna side of it.
Yeah, the Senna Nautilus.
This might push it more back towards the Smolder side. I just feel like the Senna thing, where you can have a super fed, tanky support that can't get dove, and then you go up to Grubs and have huge topside presence also, was just so massive. But maybe now it's more Smolder favored, and we're going to see some more reactions to that.
I mean, definitely if games are really slow, Smolder is strong. Like, and if the trends that we saw this last weekend are going to continue forward, Smolder, I think, is only going to be rising in priority, right? Because if you're going to have 40-minute games, we saw people at like over 400 stacks on Smolder, yeah. Right? With that kind of a game, it's just crazy. One of the games, I want to say, it was up to a 13% HPXU off of a Q that's like AoE applying, plus it has the true damage burn, plus the base damage. Like, that is just crazy, crazy amounts of damage. And when you're getting that late, you always have the rapid fire in. So it's like, even if it's against a scary team, you only step forward when rapid fire is up and you're just Q poking. It's yeah. Like, it's really, really hard to deal with that champ when it's playing at a far range.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, is there any other past stuff you want to talk about, or should we talk for a little bit this week?
I think we covered most of the things. There were a couple item changes. I don't really see those.
Yeah, Frozen Heart got
there. Were the support items were changed a little bit, like the sled and the celestial shield item. I don't play enough support to really have a strong opinion about that.
I still think they should nerf the Zazak AP one that does percent match max HP and nerf the Blood Song again.
And make supports only be able to play pink wards all game.
I feel like I'm the premier support hater on the current dive roster. But I don't even hate them.
As someone who doesn't play it and only plays against it, I think them to be really weak.
I think
weak.
I'm just...
When Kobe, when the support player opens the shop, there should only be pink wards. That's Kobe's pitch.
No, not quite that extreme.
There could be ruby crystals.
You can have
too.
A heart of gold in there. Let's bring back heart of gold.
Sight stones as well. Yeah.
Candle gem if it's a luxury buy.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Honestly though, the middle ground is the way to go. I want it to be a fun role too.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into some of the kind of standings, what and whatnot. Going into the final week, FlyQuest sitting in first, 8-3. They went 1-1 this last week, though. 100 Thieves is in second. They also went 1-1. They're now 7-4. Two teams on the rise, potentially. NRG and Cloud9 both tied in third, now at 6-5, but they both are coming off of 2-0 weekends. Then we have Dig and Shopify, who both went 1-1 respectively, and TL and Immortals went 0-2. Immortals now kind of falling pretty far behind the pace as they're in eighth.
Oh, yeah.
Shopify's in seventh. Immortals on a 4-game slide. So they obviously have some work to do if they're going to get in the playoffs.
And it feels like we have finally gotten like some separation. You know, I was waiting for when is someone really going to fall behind the pack?
Mm-hmm.
This whole split has been like, oh, LCS, you know, everyone's like taking random games off other people. And even in games that they lose, a lot of their teams are looking pretty strong. To me, now it finally does feel like Immortals, they really like this week has to be the most exceptional week of practice for this squad to make a banger super week for them coming up, or else it's going to be lights out. It's funny because it reminds me of the beginning of the year when we're talking about all our power rankings and you're like, oh, I'm shocked, like I put Immortals last, but I didn't know everyone else was going to put them last. Yeah. And I'm like,
what was just, yeah. It was so unanimous, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. It's just there's got to be a last place, right? And
it's got to be them.
Yeah, and they're living up to it. I mean, I don't know. It's just no hate toward them, but they just aren't as strong as everybody else.
As we're starting at the bottom, there is one interesting thing that I really caught on to this weekend in the interview after the Cloud9 game when JoJo was talking. One of the most shocking things that I actually heard all weekend, he was talking about ranking the best mid laners. He was like, Quid was actually number two, but the next person he mentioned was Mask. And he was like, when Mask first got here, he was the guy, you know, I thought he was right up there. And I felt like JoJo was about to rank him number three. And then he went on to say that since then he's fallen off and he's not that guy anymore. But that still to me was like a big vote of confidence, because pretty much unanimously, even when Cloud9 or JoJo is doing bad, everybody's like, yeah, JoJo's the authority on mid lane. People will trust this guy. And
I mean,
I had not heard that sentiment echoed about Mask anywhere else.
Yeah.
So that to me was a cool thing that stood out, even if it was slightly dampened by like, oh, you know, he's not that good anymore or hasn't been.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, maybe I could have some hope for Immortals resurgence or comeback or something, or maybe there's an angle there.
I know I've heard they're still doing pretty well in scrims, and they even talked about that in the pros episode with the former TLA players when they had, it was like Armeo and Ayla and who was the third player? I'm spacing out. But anyway, there was a third player in there as well, and they were talking about it, and Armeo was talking about how they're still doing really well in scrims. And I do think a lot of that comes from that, because I had heard that Mask was actually really smurfing scrims. And some of the ones that I went over and got to watch, he was doing really well also. But, I mean, Immortals, like, as much as we're joking about it, they have had a pretty tough run of it for a while now, right? So it's like, as much as they have, you know, fallen off and they're looking like they're going to finish potentially last, okay, summer 2023, 10th. Spring 2023, 9th. Summer 2022, 9th. Spring 2022, 10th. LCS lock-in, 9th, 10th, right? Like,
I mean, they're doing better now. They're up to 8th.
They're up to 8th, yeah.
No more 9th or 10th place finishes.
It's like the, you know, the meme, like the bright side of the bus, the sad side of the bus. It's like, Immortals are no longer 10th. there's no longer 10 teams in the league, you know, like, but it's been a while since they made playoffs back with the Xersei roster a while ago. That was, you know, 2021 summer, I guess. Yeah. That's the last time that they actually were able to make playoffs, but it's been kind of sad. 'Cause I do feel like this team showed us some glimpses of something, you know, early on. And I feel like they've had some recurring problems. Like, it does still feel to me like Tactical is mostly the only way this team ever wins. Like, if he's having a really good game, it feels like that's generally when they're going to win. If he's not having a good game, it never feels like they really have much of a chance. And I do think that there was some things that you would hope that they would be able to answer. I know it's like when they play the TF game, they had, that was maybe kind of extreme, but like the Wave got slow stacked, they get dove, they get zoned off. And it just felt like that was exactly repeated this week in the Smolder game that Tactical played. And it felt like one of those situations where even seeing draft, we're like, oh, they're going to have a pretty losing lane and they're going to get pushed in. I think they went Maokai Smolder and they were playing against Senna Nautilus with an Ivern on the other team who's going to be like super fast clear. And they just didn't really have any way, it felt like, to fight at level one. So he was going to get stacked on them. But Armeo cleared bot to top and like wasn't there to cover the dive. So I think Tectal actually died, but at the very least he got zoned off. And it was like early on, he had, I don't know, less than half the CS of his opponent. I remember thinking when we were checking in, it was like 15, 16 minutes. And he had like 40 stacks on Smolder. It was something ridiculous. Ooh. And they almost came back in this game. He ended up getting put mid, and then he was like farming both Raptors and Wolves on repeat and mid lane. He was like super stacking and ended up getting, and it looked like they were going to win the game and they lost still. But it's just one of these things where I feel like they've had some of these recurring issues where it doesn't feel like they're all on the same kind of page. And it's hard to say, because you could easily just be like, it's jungler's fault, he should have been there. But at the same time, if the bot lane's saying, we win this matchup or we're fine, then like, of course, the jungler doesn't know the path there, right? So I don't know where the problems are coming, but it has felt like a number of times this year, and a lot of times, honestly, just like there's been situations where Armeo is always a little bit behind the play, and like he's always showing up a little bit too late when the enemy jungler has already made the play, as though he's trying to answer it. So I just feel like that's been one of the big recurring problems for them and something that they've been struggling to solve, which don't want to say it's all his fault, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, especially when you're at the bottom of the standings. Like, probably most of the stuff they're trying is not working, so it gets really hard for everyone to like buy in on this is how we want to play. But I think the stuff I've always heard about Armeo is like he's a solid player. He has a very like definitive way he wants to play, and I think he likes having a lot of resources, and so, you know, with a team who can play around that, it's good. But, you know, if you have lanes that like need a lot of help, then it might not go too well.
Yeah, that's always rough, because then it looks also like you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Right, as a jungler, and you know, you're trying to be efficient, and to Azale's point, if your lane is telling you we are going to get pushed in but we'll be fine, then
that's not really your fault.
You're like, well, yeah, exactly. I will say I did like the line that Meteos gave, though, where he's like, somebody does have to be last. And it made me think, do you guys feel like it's actually, you know, is it comforting to have the same team be last all the time? Or would it be worse for all the other fans of all the other teams if everyone like took a turn being last, like if everybody had to rotate down there and be
the mortals are really just taking one for the team?
Yeah,
it's good guys that
like,
they are.
It's like all they're like buffering the bottom, so they're lifting everybody else up in the league.
No matter how far you fall, you can always land on
mortals. I've always wondered, you know, obviously I don't think it would be good, but what if there was a team in the LCS that was just like a complete meme team? Like, they lost every game, but they just had really interesting games.
He's pointing at them. Come on, bro.
Nah, like, this team just goes in and they just draft some troll comp every game, and it's like, everyone loves watching them, but you just know they're never going to win. Like, I don't know.
Like,
I don't think it'd be good for the league, but
bring back Delta Fox.
It would be funny. Yeah, yeah, something like that.
That's basically what it is. But to be fair to them, they're one game behind Shopify. They're two games behind Team Liquid. Right? Like, and Dignitas. So as much as you know, they're getting the kind of some shots fired at them a little bit. It's like they are still in it. They still do have a chance. Yeah. They have to win at least two to get a tiebreaker for playoffs. If they win three, hey, maybe they could get all the way in. But there's no guarantees. It's definitely a really rough situation. But moving on up a little bit, how are you guys feeling? I mean, we can talk about Shopify if you want, but I'm kind of curious how you feel about Team Liquid, just because Team Liquid has felt like they've been relatively up or down. I think they started a little bit hotter, but we had more questions about like, okay, well, you seem to only be winning with these kind of like late game scaling compositions that are front to back team fights. There was like the dependence on Udyr and stuff. And it doesn't really feel like they've developed a tremendous amount from then. And APA really feels like he's kind of struggling in this split as well. Mm-hmm. Now they go 0-2. They're potentially in danger of even missing playoffs if like a Shopify or an Immortals has a good week and they have a bad week.
A team like Liquid for sure feeling the heat. On Mondays is usually all LCS teams' day off, you know, one day off per week. And I messaged Spawn to go grab food, and he's like, we're working. So 0 days off this week for Team Liquid. They are for sure, they always have lofty expectations. You know, with Steve running the org, he's always trying to put together, you know, the best that he can and look towards winning and look towards international and all that stuff. And so coming off of a middle of the pack ranking and a 0-2 week, you know, like this team is in full, put your heads down, we're grinding, we're gonna save this, like make the improvements now. And it's just left to see, can they improve on this? Because if we're listening to stuff like the Pros podcast, which has been exceptional, by the way, you should definitely go check it out. Every new episode, the last one where they had Inspired and Impact and JoJo and all three of them, whenever they're discussing this team, were talking about the two carries, mid lane and bottom lane, and they would do like little side jabs at them every now and again, and like throw some random comments here and there, and be like, oh, yeah, I wonder why Team Liquid are losing ground early game, or I wonder why, you know, this type of thing is happening. I feel like this super week is going to be critical in evaluating, you know, whether Team Liquid limp into playoffs or they can make some real improvements in their coordination and their team fights. Some of the team fight execution, I feel like, has been an area that they can make big improvements in as far as positioning. So,
yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to note that Liquid did 0-2, but they played against C9 Energy, who are both kind of bouncing back right now. So, I don't know if it's the same as 0-2ing against like bottom of the standings teams. And their game against Energy, honestly, was just a draft gap. Like, they drafted Azir Seraphine in all tanks.
Oh, my God.
Like, they forgot their physical damage source.
It was Kasante only, basically.
Yeah, but that's not real. Like, yeah. He doesn't kill tanks.
They were really happy with that draft. I remember seeing them before the game.
They shouldn't be. I don't know. I don't know to tell you. They shouldn't be. You absolutely need sustained physical damage source to win league games most of the time. And,
yeah, I feel like we saw that.
Yeah, they didn't have it, and I don't think the result was super surprising.
And so to your point, they have Fly, which is a really hard matchup, but then they have IMT and Dig. So their fate, you know, should be in their hands. They have some teams, you know, down towards the bottom of the standings, or at least Dig, I guess, is tied with them right now, to be fair. But it's like their fate is in their hands. They did have a tough strength of schedule, but still, FlyQuest is obviously kind of an expected loss at this point. Dignitas is tied with you in the standings. Then you have Immortals, who is that last place team. So, now they definitely need to be able to pick up some wins, but I'm pretty concerned a bit for APA, I will say, because I think, you know, the discourse is obviously getting like more and more and more negative around him, it feels like. And there's rumors, you know, about like, oh, should they try their academy player? Should they try someone different? Because APA hasn't seemed to really be able to find his footing, it feels like, in this split. His laning has been kind of struggling. And then there's obviously some of these moments that people are going to point to where he's having like a big oopsie, like the Taliyah game.
Yeah, that was crazy.
He just starts TPing in front of the Azir. And you could see, as soon as he did it, he like knew that he had messed up even before he got interrupted. Like, he made a big reaction. So like, he just realized what he had done. But it's one of those moments that was like a panic moment. Like, he could have for sure Taliyah ulted out. He might have even just been able to walk out along the wall. That was a rough situation. So he wasted TP, which let them start Baron as well off of it, because he didn't have TP and dies.
Yeah, it's such a touchy subject, but you could see it too on like the Pros episode I was referencing when Impact was on it, and the other two players are kind of like low key flaming, and then Impact can't say anything. Like, he's like takes a drink of water during the response. They're like, do you want a response? He's like, no, I don't want to. You know,
yeah, I mean, like,
he's got worst CSD in the league in mid lane. He's got the biggest gold difference at 10 in mid lane. He's like, he's struggling, right? And even below Insanity, who was playing a lot of tanks early, which you would more expect someone to be behind, you know, when he had like Sion and Vayne game and stuff, right?
Yeah, I think he's definitely had the spotlight on him because, you know, they've been getting by with these scaling comps, which don't, you know, we're talking about like support being inflated and whatnot. And I almost feel like scaling comps are pro play kind of like inflated in a way where it just comes down to like, what is the requirement of execution? Like how many pitfalls do you have to avoid? And when you're playing like Azir, Tristana, Ziggs, whatever, like your job's not that hard. Grant, I'm not like trying to take away from what he's doing, but it's not the same thing as playing some other stuff where you have to just continually execute, continually pressure, be able to like read what your opponent's going to do and make good plays to stay ahead. So, you know, we've been waiting to see more from him and it seems like we might not. Maybe he's, I mean, he's still pretty new. Like he's, I'm sure he's got stuff to learn, but yeah, definitely.
This is his first full split, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. I don't think there should be expectations of him being like the best player ever, but yeah, some of his mistakes like the Tilia thing have been pretty big.
And TL has never been scared of making changes. I mean, him coming in was a big change when they replaced Harry with 7 games left. So it's like,
I'm scared of making changes, even though it has been rough. I'm always like, especially right before playoffs, unless something is super, super bad internally, I'm usually pretty on the side of like, all right, really, you know, try and work it out. Unless, you know, the person you're bringing in is some crazy all-star that is like going to guarantee some success.
Which won't be the case.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of hope that they stick it out and they try and work on, you know, their issues and work through the improvement. Mm-hmm. But it is, they're definitely in the pressure cooker right now.
They really are. And I think it's a bit of an interesting question. You were talking about like, oh, like the like inflated stuff for LCS is playing these kind of scaling comps. I would also say that this reminded me really heavily of, it was a game I cast with Poe Belter. It was the Dignitas Shopify game where this was kind of like a classic example of a team drafting basically no hard engage. And on the Dignitas side, they were playing Jace, Volibear, Huey, Lucian, Nami, right? So Volibear is kind of your only engage, or I guess Nami alt, right? But like, come on. And then the other side, it was Narsej, Wani, Talia, Smolder, Nautilus, like lots of forms of engage. And it just feels like this was one of those examples, and I was talking about this a lot with Poe Belter, where it's like, can you see how the Jace comp and whatnot could win? Yes, of course. But these comps historically have always done so much worse in the LCS because it's such a narrow margin, I feel like, where you have to play it. I think when you're playing low engage or no engage comps, you have to play it so well because you can't really ever play from behind, right? If you mm-hmm. if you ever kind of drop the ball or you start falling back, there's very few ways to get back into the game because people can kind of just like split push up very far because they know there's not a hard lockdown to actually stop you. So like Rich was just on Gnar shoving in waves all the way to tier twos and stuff like that because there wasn't really people to pick them off. There's not that ability to just like get one quick pick and turn around the game in the same way, or at least I think it's much harder to do. And it is always interesting because there's always that balance of we're getting close to playoffs, you want to be flexible, but also we're getting close to playoffs, you need to be winning games, right? Yeah. Like you need to be playing the comp that is going to get you a win, that is going to get you into playoffs, that's going to get you to the next round. So I'm kind of interested where you guys land on that versus like at this point in the season, should teams still be experimenting and playing these like potentially higher cap comps that are more difficult to play, or should you just be playing two sources of hard engage frontline with good DPS and try to win games?
Play what's the best. If something is OP, spam that. Like if you're trying to get into playoffs, yeah. That's the key. When you have extra time and you have more freedom, you should try and diversify. You know, you should have the ideal like multiple strategies, multiple comps and stuff like that. But if you're on the brink, like some of these teams we're talking about that are on the line, then you have to play what the is your highest win rate, basically, and get in there. Once you're in playoffs, then you can use your practice time to diversify and come up with better things and answers for when inevitably you get to a best of five, everyone's going to say, hey, end of the season, they only spammed this scaling comp or whatever. So everyone's going to practice and build against that. And so you know that as well. Try and turn that into your advantage during the practice time and, you know, get craft other things that you're going to be able to pull out in best of fives. But for right now, it's win now.
Yeah, it's tough because the season's so short, right? It's like 6 weeks and there was the 2-week break. So I don't know. I think you do definitely want to try to play to win. But we see this a lot with teams where, you know, you can get short-term success doing these Band-Aid fixes. Like, okay, you know what? We're just not going to we're going to like neglect this entire play style. We're not even going to try to play this way. And it might get you better results in the short term, but I think it actually hurts your team in the long run because you're not improving as much. You're kind of like narrowing your scope. You're just dismissing so many potential strategies. So, I mean, it's hard. You probably want to go for the win now, but again, I don't think that's that great.
The reason I say win now for the teams that are on the line is that you literally won't have a future. You won't have a later because you won't be in playoffs.
Yeah.
For those teams, I think you should definitely do the win now. For the teams that have more room, then I definitely agree you should have diversify your strats.
It is interesting, but there's not a lot of teams with much room. It's basically FlyQuest and 100 Thieves. Those are the only teams with room.
Ah, the luxury.
The luxury. But before we get there, Energy, C9, both 2-0 weeks. Cloud9 was coming off of a pretty horrible streak. It was like 1-5 or 1-6. I think it was 1-5. 1-5 in that streak that they had gone. Yeah, of course, because they only had 5 losses. They did 2-0 this last week. They looked really good. Game 1 where they super stomped FlyQuest. Game 2 was a lot more shaky. They were like forcing Baron with his Azir Smolder comp when they didn't really need to whatsoever. The Baron got stolen from them. The game got really hard as a result. So that one was like, I don't know, you know, but like, what's your take? Is Cloud9 back? Because we're kind of dependent on them being back to win the bet.
I think they looked a lot better this week. I like Vulcan being on, you know, Engage. Nautilus type champions. I think that's just in general going to make the team look a lot better. One thing that I thought was a really like big note to me when I was watching the C9 versus Fly game is in Fly's losses, a lot of the time, like I really felt for Inspired because his bot lane let him down so unbelievably hard that game. So I don't know if you remember, but like FlyQuest late invaded bottom side, and so they just split map from level one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking as Whippo, if I'm playing Aatrox versus Renekton, my team is willingly splitting the map against me. Like they better be winning, bro.
It was
like,
Nidalee Renekton too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, yeah, top lane is completely doomed. We need to win bot. But what happened is, so Maokai, what you normally do with this is Maokai does like red Raptors, and then he needs Krugs for level 3, and then you dive bottom. And like they're stacking the wave. But what happened was Maokai got pushed off Krugs by C9's bot lane, which was a really good play by them, right? Like they're in this completely doomed situation. Some people would be like crying for the jungler to come down or like people to TP to stop the dive, but like they recognized, hey, they're spreading themselves too thin. Ash isn't covering Maokai at Krugs. And so that was a huge mistake by Busio there. And that kind of reminds me of some of FlyQuest's other losses where Inspired has been so behind because of things his bot lane was doing. Like, I think that goes to show their inexperience a little bit. And if I was Inspired, I'd be pissed, honestly. Like, you need to be able to do that play. So then he gets pushed off his Krugs. He's just behind all game. They don't have the pressure bot. Top lane is just Nidalee Renekton. Like, what can you do?
And Blabber got early first blood, so Nidalee's just super accelerated.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just like super unplayable for them. So I think that's been one of my concerns for FlyQuest. I think that their bot lane, you know, their inexperience is definitely a point where I think other teams might look to punish and get advantages, and they're just gonna have to find some way to not let that happen.
Yeah, that's gonna be you know, big for them to keep in mind. As far as the energy and the Cloud9's,
how back are they?
Back or not back?
I think C9 is back.
After the first game, I was like, okay, they're so back because there was all the scrim rumors and yeah, they're coming in. All the interviews are so confident. But I do have to say, after this one where they kept on forcing the Baron, I was like, oh, there are still some in-game calls that just don't make sense. And in the end, they still win. So it doesn't look as bad as it could. Yeah, but I feel like the conversation game right now would be so different if they ended up losing that game,
mm-hmm,
off of losing so much tempo from those Baron starts. Then it would be completely different. So that made me a little shaky. And then the energy is like the same thing where they got completely beat down, and then they only have a 2-0 because they YOLO'd. Kajas was down, they were down like 6,000, almost 7,000 gold. He just runs in, he steals the Baron like we were talking about earlier in the episode. And then so it looks like a nice shiny 2-0 for energy also. And we're like, oh, just as expected, you know, Cloud9 Energy, the two teams we thought were going to make the most of the breaks and fix everything.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they did, right? Well, Not really. So it makes this Super Week super exciting as far as what we're going to see. I do have confidence in Cloud9 because that, you know, those things are pretty easy in review. I think most of the other stuff they did this weekend
was really good.
Was all really, really positive. So
JoJo looked really good. Yeah. He had a super good weekend. I think he was Azir both games.
Yep. Tangazir and then not Tangazir.
Yeah, which, you know, obviously is a really strong champion.
But Azir's bugged, right? So it might not be...
I heard he's disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I think JoJo, I want to say, is 4-0. I think I was looking at this on Azir. So 4 of their 6 wins, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that'll be disabled.
Yeah. I'm not worried about JoJo's...
Not saying he can't play other champions.
Champion
but...
pool? Yeah. I'm not worried about his champion pool. Maybe it's something with the team overall to have him as a big DPS source as well as possible playmaker to fill in some, you know, some plays for them.
If you can make plays, but, push in lane, you can scale.
Yeah, I mean,
he just does everything.
He was also, even in some of their loss where he was Nico, that one stands out in my mind. I was like, wow, this guy is the best player in the game right now, and they're losing the game. You know, so I don't really have, I'm not
late.
Yeah. I did not expect that. But I don't have concerns for his champion pool with Azir disabled, but it definitely is a tool that they have used a lot.
Yeah, used really, really well. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think Cloud9 definitely looked much better. And I think especially just the shift, like as people have talked about, I think Blabber looked really good on Nidalee. I think that, you know, like unleashing him a little bit from tank duty in the jungle, I think helps. And I think, you know, Vulcan's play style, as an engaged champion, like I think he plays that really, really well. His Nautilus games, everyone always loves to meme on Nautilus being no skill and whatnot, but he was playing really, really well. I think in particular in the FlyQuest game, there was at least 2, if not 3, Chains of Corruption from the Varus that he buffered his Q on and just basically made it mean nothing. Like he sees the Chains of Corruption coming out, he throws his Q backwards and just pulls himself to the wall while rooted, and they just like couldn't engage onto him. And those were kind of like, you know, maybe a bit of desperation plays going for the Nautilus anyway, but I just thought he was playing really, really clean. And Cloud9 looked a lot more confident, so that's pretty exciting. NRG, there's been a lot of talk about like how good this team is, isn't. It's kind of feeling pretty reminiscent to last summer and the talk there, where it was like this team was 9-9 in regular season. People were like, are they good? Do they suck? You know, like 1 week they're terrible, 1 week they're amazing. They play a top team, they do great. They play a bottom team, they look horrible. But they did get the 2-0, as you said, you know, a little bit more shaky. But do you guys feel like, do you feel that they could actually still challenge for the championship? Do you feel like
they're ahead of the curve for their pace of winning an LCS split? Because
they're playing Mario Kart Racing against their ghosts.
They were 9-9, like you said, and they won the split. Right now they're above 50% at 6-5. So they're on track to win for sure.
Yeah, can't really argue with that.
Those are facts.
I think.
Thank you.
I think NRG is getting it together. I don't know. I wouldn't bet eating a lemon on them right now, but.
But you already did, so.
Not NRG.
No. Oh wait. No. I'm not on winning. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, they seem really up in the air to me. I think it could go a number of ways.
What do you think is their biggest hole right now? Because I've seen a lot of conversation on Dokla. Specific?
I don't know. I mean, watching their games, they have some of the most interesting games as far as like stuff is happening. I think Dokla, he's a good player. I mean, he likes playing aggressive. He doesn't really like doing the tank duty, let me play safe kind of deal. Mm-hmm. So, like, they make it spicy, and I think that fits their play style, especially Contracts. I think he's, like, any game I see Contracts playing, like, a Poppy or Rell, some kind of early playmaking jungler, I feel pretty good about for NRG. But, yeah, it seems like, I don't know, they're just not completely clean. Like they've got some sus plays going on mid.
But this team has never been completely clean, whether they were known as CLG and then they get picked up as NRG and it's most of the same players.
Yeah.
That's why they've always been, to me, so exciting to watch. And they have really high highs to reach, but you know, obviously they're constantly sitting around like 50% here, dropping some, picking up some. They picked the Vayne top, which was really funny because
and lost in the isolated 1v1 to Renekton that he counterpicked.
Everybody was
jungle diff.
Honestly, the Renekton rushing Edge of Night and getting the spell shield, really so smart. You can't get Gadev was super sick. It was pretty funny though too. Doklo was even memeing on it himself afterwards. You're talking about his stream where he was mentioning it, and then he got to have one sick play with his Condemned Flash at the very end of the game.
And then Renekton also got to do literally nothing the entire game. I think at the end of the game he was like 0-3-1 in a 40 something minute game or something like that. Like that was a visible
that's the top lane like pain simulator. That is just not fun to be the Renekton in that game, because it's like, okay, I lose early. And it's going to keep getting worse.
Yep.
Yeah. Some of my fondest memories, though, and why I really like the players on this team are how crazy they can go with drafts. This time around, like, Vayntop wasn't the reason they won. PalFox even tweeted afterwards the Pokemon quote of, like, it hurt itself in its confusion. The opponents were like, what? And then themselves and then they won. But the times when they were known as CLG and Dokla was flexing melee carries with Palafox and they were running like Akali Yone duos and stuff like that. And grabbing two of those picks are some of the coolest, team comps and team fights and stuff that we've gotten in LCS when they're making the game super spicy and Contrax is running around spamming ganks on people. So this team, they've got a lot of variability still.
I think Doko's
non-rational gamers.
True. I think Doko's a really fun player to watch, but I will say in spring last year, he was way better than he was in summer last year and also way better than he was in spring this year. Like in spring last year, I was like, holy shit, like Doko's actually gotten so much better. I thought he was beasting a lot of games, carrying a lot of games. I feel like he's been, as much as it's like, oh, he's the aggressive player, but he hasn't really carried like any games, it felt like this split or last split. Even when they were winning, I felt like he was much more of a footnote to Palafox and to the bot lane. Contract, I think, has been playing pretty damn well overall this split. I feel like the bot lane has looked a little bit more out of sorts. And I think that Palafox has also had some kind of like uncharacteristically bad games, because I feel like Palafox last year, even though they went 9-9, Palafox almost always looked good in losses, where he's had a few stinkers this split, especially the one, obviously it was the Orianna game, I think. He tweeted out that he thought it was the worst game he's ever played on stage, but like that game was a bit of a shocker. I think there was one point where he TP'd back to mid lane, and I think he had to just be looking at a different lane or something, but he just like walked into the enemy right after TPing without moving his character at all, lost all his health, had to base again, lost multiple waves, and it was just like, oh, that sucks. So I do think, they are getting it together, but Doklo hasn't been like a big carry threat. So I think Palafox has to be, playing to the top of his level. We know that he can be at that tip top level as he showed last year. So we'll see if they can do it going into playoffs. FlyQuest, 100 Thieves, you were already touching on FlyQuest quite a bit, in your concerns about the bot lane, but those are our top two teams right now. How are you guys feeling about their chances kind of in the chase for a championship as we go on?
Feeling pretty good about my lemon bet. So far as FlyQuest currently at the top of the standings, hopefully they remain there. We're gonna settle the bet on the next dive episode, by the way.
No, it's who wins the split was our bet. It wasn't the regular season.
It wasn't the regular season.
No,
we gotta check the tapes. It was for sure the regular season.
No,
it was the championship.
Dude, bro, we made.
We
the
literally
bet
talked about how we
was
to
like four games
after,
behind.
After
like, how is that? That's not even a bet.
Yeah. It's the championship. So it'll be a pre MSI.
I'm still checking
episode.
The tapes. Just
you can check, but I'm sure about this one.
You're gonna edit them.
But no, I mean, FlyQuest, their top side, I think, has been looking really good. I think their bot lane has been definitely really solid, especially for like how little time they've been in the LCS. But I still think, as you're pointing out, has some room to grow. 100 Thieves is the most interesting to me, just because everyone tells me how bad this team is in scrims, and even on the pros episode, they're talking constantly. Ayla was on and just about how they're always losing every scrim. They were like 0-18 in scrims in a row. They're just running it down in scrims, but then they go on stage and it just works. So it's kind of interesting, because sometimes teams are like that all split long. I don't know, NRG was like that when they won in summer. They were talking about how they were horrible in scrims, and I even heard of some story about how it was like the day of the finals or the day before the finals, they did a whole scrim set and lost, I think, every single game. Like didn't win a single game, and then won the championship. So sometimes it just works. I also heard they were getting pounded in scrims by G2 at Worlds, and they just go on stage and bop them. So it doesn't always go that way, but it can. But 100 Thieves is one of those where, I don't know, I guess just because so many people are telling me they're bad all the time, then I've just been waiting for the wheels to fall off a little bit.
Well, the thing I feel like people did not expect, Quid is, debatably top two mid laner in the whole league. JoJo himself had Quid number two. And I feel like that completely changes when people are trying to evaluate this team, because everyone was coming into it accepting, all right, River's going to be insane. But there's so many young guys, and Quid wasn't great last time they saw him, so not a lot of confidence there. And that's what led to all these low expectations for the team. And even the coaching staff, when we talked to the coaching staff, they're like, yeah, wow, we didn't expect to be first place either. And look at us. It kind of makes the story, makes you want to root for them even more, because there are a lot of, especially enemy top laners, you know, like, Sniper doesn't even know what he's doing. We're going to take him down. Talking trash about them and low expectations on this team. And then they come out and they have a lot of not just good individual plays, but good team plays. And then smart drafting and picks. If you remember back to the Shopify, when Shopify were doing this full tank topside, and then Quid pulls out the Aatrox mid into the Sion mid and just completely dominates them. I feel like they've done cool things. They've done smart things as well. And I'm going to just keep on riding the, 100 Thieves train until we actually see it fall off on stage, even if people are going to be warning against.
What do you think about what do you think about this statement? If 100 Thieves finishes first place the regular season, River wins MVP.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Sounds pretty good to me.
So they've got Shopify, Immortals, and Energy.
I would be worried about Quid stealing a decent amount of votes for MVP. Quid has been super good too, but yeah.
I mean, so if FlyQuest drops some games, only one back, this is a very 3-0-able weekend. And like that would be so cool, I think, if this team actually ended up finishing in first. Mm-hmm. With the expectations versus reality, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't bet money on it, though.
I wouldn't either.
Because 100 Thieves has been impressive to watch. Like, they've absolutely outperformed expectations. At the same time, their games haven't been super clean. And even this last week, I thought their draft against FlyQuest was really odd, in the sense that, like, they were red side, and they could have got counterpick for Sniper, but they blind picked Renekton on 4. Got him countered, and then they used their fifth pick to pick Trundle into Sedge, and I don't know, like,
and then it was
that's not the matchup it used to be.
Look, Sejuani, it didn't even really matter.
Yeah, I mean, you can do any rune on Sejuani, even with Aftershock. It's not even like that unplayable.
And when you're fighting 2v2s, like Sejuani has, especially early, she has such a CC advantage. Like, if the person you're fighting with has a lot of damage, a lot of times you can actually just kill the Trundle, even with the ult channeling. So, jungle counterpicks.
I don't think jungle counterpicks do a whole lot unless you're really trying to pick something. The only reason you do it is if you're trying to pick something that is hard countered, so you need them to blind, and so you can pick, not necessarily to counter them, but to make sure you don't get countered, kind of deal.
Yeah.
So
it has to be really high value for it to be worth it.
Like, yeah, I mean, she's almost never. Yeah. But that would be the only situation I could see. So yeah, I mean, they were trying something, and Jensen had like the most insane Orianna game of his life, probably. It just completely 1v9, 100% KP. So, I don't know. I think they've done well, but it wouldn't surprise me if they, don't end one or two.
Yeah. Well, it'll be an interesting final week. That'll wrap it up for us for now, because we're like 100 minutes in and we have another meeting. I think we're already late.
There
you go. You are watching us on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of The Dive. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast platform. And make sure you send us those questions on Twitter with the hashtag TheDiveLOL. If you missed our community episode, we used a lot of those last week for those. And be sure to tune in this weekend for LCS Week 6, final week of the regular season. It is starting March 8th. That is Friday. It is a super week. It's starting on Friday, and it's 1 p.m. PST. Dignitas taking on Cloud9.